This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 249, Oceans of Data. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday afternoon, getting ready to have a blast with my friend and co-host Michael Martin on GamesAtWork.biz.
Yahoo, and what a beautiful day it is. Gorgeous blue skies, chill in the air, fall is here, and we're here to talk some tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And games.
And games.
And work.
And work. Well, let's talk about some things that could be game related. It could be work related. It could be a variety of things.
It could be anything.
It could be really anything. That's true. So one of the rumor sites has an interesting concept here related to a patent that had recently come out from our friends in Cupertino called it the Apple Ring. And as they look at the patent and they kind of imagine what this might be, it's essentially, the way they describe it, is a Apple Watch on your hand. And it was an interesting...
Well, where do you put your Apple Watch?
Well, I put it on my wrist, which, you know, again, the description of this kind of made me think, well, you know, interesting that there might be a ring sort of thing. So it could be a broadening way to get people to have haptics on a finger as opposed to the wrist.
Yep.
It could be good for people for whom having something on the wrist is not something that could be there all times, you know, like if you, I guess I'm imagining that if you're in a clean room, you know, you have to have fewer and fewer things on you. Although a ring, would that potentially be a problem too? I don't know. the notion of having a ring where there could be a display on it, right? So, you know, maybe today it's a sapphire and tomorrow it's a diamond.
And the next day it's Gorilla Glass.
Yeah, I was thinking about what could be displayed on the ring. So those could be fun sort of things. But the imagined version of this that I thought was kind of interesting was the idea of having the battery for this be something that's solar powered. And when I first saw it, my thought was there would probably be like a case that you might put it in. In order for it to recharge through the ring itself. Solar power could be even more intriguing because maybe the ring becomes more of a sleep tracking device, better so than you would have with a watch, and still be able to measure things like blood pressure, potentially other stuff like that. I don't know that I would want to wear something like that though all the time. I'm not a ring guy. I'm a watch guy, but I'm not a ring guy. So what about you, Michael? Would you have a smart device on a finger, and how would you imagine using something like that?
Well, I remember, gosh, 6-7 years ago, maybe, has it been that long, going to Macworld conference and seeing people demonstrate NFC rings that would provide, you know, some set of data on a finger. And then recently there have been sleep rings that do health activities that capture, you know, as you say, pulse activities, motion, etc. So I think the market segment already exists. I'm kind of like you. I'm not that ring guy. Every once in a while, I'll wear my class ring from my MBA program if I'm going to specific customer meetings, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of, you know, that's a signal, or so to speak. But I think this is much more interesting of what it says around miniaturization and driving things down to small enough power footprints, small enough UIs, etc., to provide real value. And I can imagine in certain enterprise settings where I need data at my fingertips, so to speak, right? And being able to capture
your finger base.
Yep. Capture that data, display that data in some way that's meaningful for the task at hand. I can imagine a worker safety type environment with this, where, as you say, a clean room might have certain restrictions, but other settings might have certain restrictions where you don't want to have something that a worker can catch themselves on, but you still need to have certain sensor readings to ensure that they're not going to overheat. As an example, if you're working in a steel mill, you're only allowed to work by the smelter for a certain amount of time before you're required from a safety perspective to take breaks. Or hydrate yourself. We do have more and more improved radiation sensors as it relates to things like blood pressure and other things that you might be able to capture from a finger, which would, again, provide stress levels and things of that nature. So I think there's a lot of interesting use cases. I don't know if the iRing or the Apple Ring, as it would be now called, is meaningful as a consumer product, but I do see a lot of business settings that this might be interesting in.
Yeah, and you know, maybe there's another element of this that it could be for places and spaces where voice control or activation would be a secondary way to proceed as opposed to using gestures.
And
I was Wingardium Levioso kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was at the I don't even remember the name of the event, but it was a demo night for I think it was like the Open Something conference this week in Raleigh, North Carolina. And one of the sessions that I sat in briefly was talking. One of our good friends was quoted in the session about AR and VR being the UX of the IoT.
Right.
And I think that's the case. I think you and I have talked many, many times that it's voice and AR that are going to be that UX. If you can imagine that ring having enough capacity to do any type of voice recognition, the question again becomes the larger connectivity issue. How do I get data off that ring to something else? Is it just a data collection device, or is it something that has two-way communications to a third sensor or a third hub or something that allows me to get to the cloud? That would then allow me to do that, voice recognition. And then is it going to provide taptic feedback to me to let me know, hey, something's going on here? Does it have enough capacity to have a speaker on it? You get into all these different ways. How do you interact with it? Is it just going to, give me a red, yellow, green light on the display to say, hey, there's a warning here? Or is it connected up to my Apple AirPods to give me information there? Just lots of interesting ideas come to mind.
Yeah, it certainly does. And, it's funny. I just clicked through to an example that exists today. So there's a product called the Echo Loop, which allows you to interact with Alexa.
Yeah, that was recently announced, I thought, at the Amazon conference.
Right. And so the video behind it, kind of gives those examples where there is a little speaker and microphone in it so that you can hold your hand close to your ear and it can kind of whisper sweet nothings.
like your secret agent guy.
On your list at the grocery store or whatever it is. And no more digging for your phone.
Yes. The rosary are in the cabinet.
Yeah. So with that in mind, that was an intriguing article that I stumbled upon this week from CNBC, where an Internet of Things thing allows you to quantify yourself when it comes to your interactions with the Supreme Being. So long story short, it's a rosary. It is a IoT device.
An
e-rosary, which allows you to kind of go through the rosary and, I suppose, for it to track, how many times you've gone through it. And then it looks like it has a syncing capability and a recharging capability. And the good news here is that it detects movement and stores data so that if you wanted to see, how are you doing, you can close your rings.
leaderboards, prayer leaderboards. Oh, my God.
you could have a challenge. This was launched by the Vatican, and it has a click to pray as opposed to click to pay scheme. So I don't know. I mean, there's aspects of this that are funny. There are other aspects of this that feel quite natural. You know, why wouldn't you take advantage of this sort of thing? And
This is so wrong.
Really? You think so?
I just have a major problem with this. My whole thing is, you know, okay, if you're praying, right? You do that because you believe that somebody is listening, right?
Yes.
They might not act on it, or they may act on it in a different way than you're expecting. But this to me is like all the potential negative things that could happen in a voice assistant. But in this case, the negative things are not that some developer or engineer in a lab hears that you said something mean about your boss while talking to your Alexa device. But if you play that out, this says, God has heard that you have said something wrong, or that you misstated in your prayer, or you didn't pray enough, or you didn't pray in. I mean, it just, to me, this is like inviting, you know, if you got the little devil on one shoulder and little angel on the other shoulder.
Yes.
This says, and they both have hooked up to the NSA to listen to everything you said. They're monitoring. Did you pray enough? Did you pray to the right God? Did you pray the right thing at the right time? I had so many issues with this thing. It's unbelievable.
So I understand now where you're going, and I can see where those reservations are important and make sense. Where I took it was, gosh, if you go back to philosophy 101, you know, how do you become a good person? You become a good person by establishing good habits. How do you establish good habits? Well, you do those things on a regular basis every day. So that doesn't mean that we're now applying the freemium model of gameplay where you get a loot box, you know, every third day when you exercise your e-rosary. But it could be one of those things that allows you to say, because you're because it's being measured, it is something that actually gets done.
So I can imagine you're standing there at the end. You're in front of the gates with St. Peter, if you believe that mythos, and you say, but look at my quantification. I prayed 37 times each day. Come on.
for those that maybe struggle, that could use a reminder to drink that extra glass of water, or to get that extra 1,000 steps, or to, you know, I understand. I understand your points, but if you flip it just in that direction, that says, hey, have you done your mindfulness minute? Have you stood up for a couple minutes every hour? Those are all habits that other IoT devices and wearables are helping you to achieve for potential benefit. I think your reservation around, could a verbalized prayer be something that could be used, intercepted, or judged in some way or fashion other than by God? And could it be listened to? So gotcha. 100% on that.
You got it.
But, one of the cool, nifty, neato things about our supreme being, again, for those that have that belief, is that you don't necessarily need to verbalize.
Yes, and?
Well, I just finished that thought by thinking it.
Oh, man.
You didn't get that?
I didn't get it. I must not be your supreme being. And I'm okay with that.
Well, so... So for those of us that are trying to have a deeper impact on the environment, and by deeper, I do mean deeper. We're talking oceans here.
Yes.
There was another article that was super intriguing to you when you first saw it, and for me too, once I started reading about it a little bit more. Set this up for us and talk to me about corals.
Yeah, so this is really interesting, because what the article is really about is kind of an accelerator program that sits on a boat. Right. And the part of the article that was the most interesting to me is about a company called Corals that Coral Vita that has developed a way to fast grow coral and then to then deploy this new healthy coral onto dying coral reefs to try to stimulate growth and make those reefs more resistant to bleaching and other threats. So the idea is we know that as climate change has continued to expand and accelerate, it is having an impact on coral reefs, and coral reefs are a huge food source for lots of different fish and other ocean-dwelling creatures, which then provide a larger food source for the rest of the ocean. And also, corals are really cool to scuba and snorkel around too, right? So there's all kinds of both, you know, consumer-friendly and environmentally friendly reasons to make sure that we maintain and grow our coral reefs. And using this method that they've developed, they say they grow coral 50 times faster than normal rate.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And just think of, you know, the Great Barrier Reef and, you know, yes. How many hundreds of years or thousands of years, I don't even know how old it is, it took to grow, right? So as we see major reefs dying off, the ability to reestablish them or build new ones at a much faster rate is just fascinating to me. I thought it was a really good way of demonstrating the positive impact that technology can have on the environment.
So the thing, and I am by no means an oceanographer or one that's got a lot of experience around coral reefs, but what I thought was one of the main problems here is that the reefs were dying out because of a combination of changes in the ocean chemistry and the changes in temperature too.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like this particular organization is doing something not just to grow reefs faster, but to increase the resiliency, which I would have to imagine would cater for both of those things, the changing chemistry and the changing temperature.
Yes.
And according to their website, there's a whole range of other dangers that are there too that I hadn't really thought about, like dredging projects, ships that are grounding themselves, you know, that can disturb that, you know, pretty dramatically as well.
Yeah.
So wow.
There's other interesting incubators on that vessel, right? There's one that's looking on how to more appropriately identify plastic and other wastes in the water using video recognition. There's a company that's working on building a new type of foam that's based out of I don't know how to pronounce this word, Chitin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
Instead of styrofoam as a way to build much more effective and sustainable and non-damaging packaging material. Just all kinds of really cool things. And hey, they're on a boat.
On a boat.
So they're doing things that are good for the ocean while they're chilling on a boat. On the ocean. Very, very cool.
Loving that. So when we were doing the pre-show and pulling everything together, it reminded me, and I wish I could have found the BBC article that I listened to only yesterday. So it could be that it just hasn't been published up on the Beeb just yet, was dealing with the idea of strengthening concrete while decreasing the amount of stone and energy required to build buildings, bridges, all the things that you use concrete for these days. And in doing so, through that method, you're able to save, from what I recall of the article, over 10% or round about 10% of the cost structure. And the thing that made me giggle when I first heard it was that the seeding of the concrete, kind of like the seeding of these coral reefs, it is being done through particles that are harvested from, wait for it, carrots.
Love me some carrots.
Yes.
Only raw. And,
It's got to be done, you know, somewhere or another. So this is from the scientists at the University of Lancaster. And one of the things that they've also talked about in the article that I heard on the radio yesterday was that it's not just carrots, because they were being questioned about, you know, how much carrots would you need to actually grow to do this sort of thing? And are there enough? And part of the answer is, well, you know, you could also do it with sugar beets. And sugar beets have, in the processing of extracting sugar from the sugar beets, a number of elements that are essentially waste products. And so those could be harvested in much the same way. So I thought, gosh, you know, how incredible could it be that as we're looking more and more for sustainable environments overall, whether we're talking about the ocean or cities or anywhere that might use concrete, if you're able to do it in a more structured manner, and doing so where we're not consuming as much of the non-renewable resources that are on the planet, leveraging something like carrots or sugar beets to be able to build those more sustainable buildings could be really, really helpful.
Yeah. Can they use rhubarb and squash?
Didn't talk about that.
Because I don't like rhubarb or squash, and they could grind them all up into cement for all I care.
Yeah, or peppers for that matter too, right?
Or peppers, yeah. You can put those in there too. Matter of fact, you could like go to restaurants with me, and I could just point out all the things that they could just recycle into cement, and then I would have really nice meals.
There you are. See, solves more than one problem. Now, what if you had a problem of just wanting to keep up with the latest and greatest on audio technology?
I do have that problem. How can you help me with this?
There are multiple ways I could help you with this. But one of them was a concept from Sonos where they are providing audio or speakers as a service. Yes. So you're able through Sonos to say for a particular, you know, tiered structure, I'm willing to spend so much. I'd like to have this package of Sonos products. And I could anytime say, I've had enough. Thank you very much. Take them away. Or what I thought was super intriguing too is that as speaker technology gets better and better and better, since you're buying it as a service, Sonos will send you the new subwoofer when the 2022 subwoofer awesome amazing product comes available and you've bought in at that tier. You send yours back, they send you a new one, and now you have access to that greatest thing all for the same low as a service price, which kind of takes you out of the whole ownership cycle, because speakers can get way crazy expensive if you're buying them that way. Of course, the flip side is you're spending a lot of money every month
and you don't have anything.
You don't have anything to keep at the end.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. It's kind of a twist to the model that, you know, Apple and others are doing with cell phones now, where you pay a set price per month, and then you have the option each year to get the latest and greatest. Mm-hmm. The difference that I see here is cell phones, those get upgraded every month every year or two, right?
Right.
Speakers, how often have you heard of an upgrade to a set of speakers? Now, I'm not a Sonos guy.
You need to pay a lot of attention to it to have that.
Yeah. I'm not a Sonos guy, so I don't have their speakers. Mm-hmm. I have speakers in my office here that are, 40 or more years old.
Yikes.
That sound incredible. That I have hooked up to a pretty new stereo system. And then I have another set of speakers that I added to it that are probably 6 or 7 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're awesome too. And I like my speakers. Is it something that I feel that I need to upgrade to the latest and greatest? I mean, is speaker technology changing that fast? Maybe the software drivers behind speakers are, but the speakers themselves aren't.
Well, right, and I'll warrant that your 40-year-old speakers don't have a lot of software behind them.
I would say they have none.
Now, what's driving them, right, your receiver, Yep. On the flip side, that may have software driving it. Yeah.
Yep. Probably does.
Yeah.
I haven't done a BIOS update on it though.
Ah, okay.
So
I don't know. I mean, this is probably, I would think about it as not for me as yep. well. And anytime,
and they're not consumable. They're not like Continental Tires that some years back did the tires as a service, right? So every X number of months, they would replace the tires on your car, right? That's yeah, something exactly. that is a consumable, and right. over time goes, you know, gets less effective until the point where it's not safe, and you absolutely were going to have to replace them anyway. It's not, like I said, I don't think it's at the same tech refresh rate at something like a laptop or a cell phone. So I think it's them trying to build a model that I don't know if it's needed.
Well, it's an interesting thing to put into the market to see how it plays out. So for cell phones, you bet. Changes yeah, happening I mean, all the time. You're, televisions, you're, maybe so too.
I right? mean, Sonos speakers are expensive from what I understand, right? And they're good quality, so great for that. And if you get their kind of their high-end offering, it was like $50 a month roughly. Mm-hmm. So you're spending $600 a year. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, $600 a year on good speakers. And the question is, how often would you buy new ones? If it's yeah. every 3 years, and I don't know if that's a good offer. I mean, talk about my speakers again. If it's every 6 years, right, that's $3,600 in speakers?
Yeah, that's a ton of money.
And you know, my new good ones here, I think, were under $800.
Well, so maybe for you and me, one place, a market where something like this could be interesting might be in headphones.
Yep.
Because headphones are a little bit more on the consumable side.
And so, I replace my AirPods every 2 years now.
Oh, there you are. Yeah. So that might be something.
So but I they're constantly really refreshing the technology on them too, right? Too.
Yeah, and those are right. They keep on having better and better things to them.
Yeah.
So interesting. Just looking at the time, we've got still a lot to cruise through. So let's cruise to some of the robotics stuff.
Yeah.
So long-time listeners and new listeners probably know that we like our robots and our bots here on the show.
Yes.
And bots that can pick things up is something that is important, right? Because if it's just, you know, zooming around, not doing stuff, that doesn't help you. So that you found this neat article about how MIT's figured out how to machine learn their way into robots getting and grasping items.
Yeah, the interesting thing here is really the technological change on speed of grasping, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of robots nowadays are still very slow, you know, in measured in minutes to, if they're really fast, seconds before they react and do something by trying to pick something up. How do they grasp, right? Because they're trying to figure out all the different sensory inputs that gives them enough information to grasp something at the right strength to manipulate it.
Right. Yeah. So, like a strawberry.
Like a strawberry, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
And so having robots that are not fit for purpose, right? Because that's what the strawberry robot is. It's fit for purpose to be a much more general purpose robot that can very, 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 very quickly understand what a thing is, how to grab the thing, and how to manipulate the thing is critical for the advancement in robot technology, especially in manufacturing and in the more consumer side to do more general purpose things instead of fit for purpose things. And I think this is interesting how they're pushing this. And if they get down to, you know, sub-second, we're getting to almost the speed of humans.
Yeah, we are, and there's the combination of visual plus tactile that have to work in concert for that to really sing.
Yep.
You know, how do you figure out that a strawberry is squishable until you've squished a few?
Yeah.
Unless you can see it.
And the really interesting thing about this is the second article I found.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the exact opposite. So a couple of months back, we had the robot that solved the Rubik's Cube in effectively second or sub-second speed.
Yeah.
It was like, and it was done, right?
Right.
So you've played with the Rubik's Cube, right?
Absolutely.
Have you ever tried to manipulate it in one hand?
I have, but you need the racing cubes to do that.
Right, and it's kind of awkward.
Yeah.
So what they've done is the OpenAI project has actually built a hand that is robotic that can solve a cube one-handed. And it takes it about 4 minutes to solve. And when you look at it, much of that is literally jostling the cube to try to get it in the right position so that the phalanges can adjust the cube correctly.
Yeah, but I thought it was also, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what are all the squares, right? So I had to figure out.
It does that to start with. And, and I think it actually has cameras on each of its fingertips.
It has to, yes.
Right? So it's doing that, but it's also, it's bouncing the cube too. For positioning, because there's a couple of times early on in the video where you can see it kind of getting the rotation stuck,
mm-hmm.
which, like you said, if you had a racing cube, you wouldn't have that problem. But you can see it doing exactly what happened to me when I tried to do it with one hand, right? You get to a certain point where I just can't turn it. Well, let me just kind of shift the hand a little bit and bounce the cube a little bit to get it to turn.
Right.
And so this is the example of a robot that's doing pretty cool general purposey type stuff, right? And I say that somewhat in jest, but is much more in the slow motion mode instead of the extremely fast motion mode of the previous robot.
Well, true. I would say though that the learning could go faster, right?
Oh yeah.
Is it your understanding that the range of motion of the fingers of this robotic hand are mimicking the range of motion of a human hand too?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what it looks like to me.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but it looks like it's trying to be very human.
It does look like that, but you know, the limitations of humans doesn't have to quite be there, as we've seen with other robots too. Yeah. They have different ways of locomotion, different ways of doing a lot of different things. You know, the hand could be such that the fingers could bend around backwards.
But the idea is, what can we do and how do we learn to mimic human behavior? And so a cube is a solvable problem.
Yep.
One-handed is a solvable problem. Getting a robot to do that also means we are now building a level of dexterity, understanding, and cognition into a device that's much more human-like that we could then use to
do a lot of other things.
Do a lot of other things, exactly.
Like pick strawberries.
Yeah. Or board a plane.
Yeah. So speaking of which, this falls sort of in my category of, well, yes, finally. All the
about
mobile apps,
time.
All the mobile apps that we have, you know, have a variety of functions that they do. So one mobile app thing that I've constantly done, and I bet you have too, is like, oh, my flight is coming up, right? I've gotten my boarding pass on my phone. I've been able to, you know, scan in. I've been able to get through security, all that kind of good stuff. And then I'm like having to check about when it's boarding time. So I have to open the app. The boarding pass doesn't say boarding time. It says departure time.
Yeah,
so
no, like, isn't that annoying?
It is. You know, if I had a ring that might just, you know, buzz at me when it was time to get on the plane, that would be helpful.
Yes.
So anywho, now, at least for the American Airlines app, they have a capability where it will tell you, hey, Michael, which would work for either one of us, which is kind of nice. Hey, Michael, it's time to get on the plane.
Go get the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that I like it. I think that's quite good, actually.
Yes. And once again, as you said, about time.
Yeah, about time. So
I think we're kind of at time.
Yeah, I know. It's
so
sad,
so
isn't it?
It, wow, just too much fun.
Where
so,
does it
so
all go?
You found something really cool that you wanted to share real quick.
All right. Yep. So I've got two games and a thing. So game number one is actually not a game. It's thousands of games.
It's all the games.
Well, kind of, sort of. If you're an 8-bit guy, kind of like me, you want to get back to some of these consoles and so on, you can head on over to the Internet Archive, which, according to our fun article from a little earlier this week, you can check out all of these free retro games by going to archive.org. And there's apparently over 2,500. I have not played that many. So
I played them all. Not really.
Yeah, so that I love. So that's awesome. A game that I'm playing at the moment, or yes, that I started playing a little bit, but I'm not sure I'm going to keep it, is SSC Soccer. So it's SSC 2019. And as retro soccer games kind of go, with relatively simple user experience for moving your players around, passing, kicking, that sort of thing, it's pretty easy. Although I'll tell you, in my demo environment and my training environment that I was working in yesterday, day before, whenever it was, I managed to foul out all of my players by slide tackling from the back and getting yellow cards and double yellow cards and red cards and getting sent off. So even in the demo mode, they don't want you to hurt the virtual little players.
That takes all the fun out of it.
I know. I wasn't trying to hurt anybody. It just kind of happened. I was pressing the red button as opposed to the blue button. And last thing, and I just include this because, you know, Lego, what are you going to do? Yeah, Lego Ideas, a new one, is a kit, kind of like a in the museum kit. And it has these Lego dinosaur skeletons with a museum visitor, which I thought was super, super cool. And on the box itself, there is a little plaque in the museum that talks about Triceratops, Tyrannosaurus, and then it says Lego Sapiens, which is a little skeleton with a Indiana Jones hat on it. So I thought that was super fun.
That was very funny.
Yeah.
Well, what are you playing? Got one little game to share, and as people know, I've been playing around with Apple Arcade. The large number of Mac apps have all kicked out now.
Woohoo!
And it's funny because every couple of days you get an alert saying, hey, here are some more games that we just uploaded. And there's most of the games are available on all the platforms, so Apple TV, iOS, iPadOS, or macOS. One that I just played some today and early on when it first came out on the iPhone is What the Golf, which is a physics simulator golf game where, as they quote, the golf game for people who hate golf. So you start off and it's a very traditional couple of holes of golf where you swing the club and hit the ball and try to get a hole in one. But eventually it gets silly. Like the first silly level is you have your little guy standing there. He's got the club. You say swing and it throws the guy across the golf course. With your goal is to hit the pin with the golfer instead of the golf ball.
Oh, yeah.
And then you go through different levels and little story mode where the golf ball goes into a different land and you come up periodically to different golf courses. There's one where you throw the golf hole into the golf hole.
Yep.
And it's lots of fun. It's basically a physics simulator, but it's fun to play with. And it's another one of these games that you can dip in and dip out very quickly.
Oh, cool. That sounds like fun. So how many more days do you have before your free trial is up?
I decided to keep it.
Ah.
So the free trial ended 2 days ago.
Well, so there's an as a service that's making a difference for you already, huh?
That's right.
Love it. Well, so what does our listening audience think as a service that might work? What are your wackiest IoT devices that you've been seeing? What sort of reefs and ocean things are you noticing that are worth saving and through some very novel needs? You could share those with us.
You could.
You could send them to us on Twitter. You could Facebook them at us. You could drop us a mail. Put a
comment on the show notes for this show over at gamesatwork.biz.
Exactly. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to talk about them, and we will do that when we're back with you next time on gamesatwork.biz.
.biz. See you. You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.